Well, folks, things are on some fronts moving in a positive direction, and others we're not so sure. Over the past several weeks, we've had significant discussions with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, about judges, how they're handling their dockets, where they stand, whether or not we're getting any kind of return on our investment on so many different fronts. And it's been really interesting conversation. A lot of folks have been paying attention, and there have been some changes, and Rafi's here to talk to us about it. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be back, Newell.
So I guess we'll start with judges. I saw there was another announcement this morning where one of the judges has taken a leave of absence.
All right, we talked about that last week on the show.
Yep.
So, you know, we released our first report on criminal district court, and basically we call out our judicial accountability series of reports. So we're kind of pulling back the curtain and disclosing what the performance is and the management, the docket management for each of the 12 judges in criminal district court. And as a court as a whole, the numbers were very good. There was one outlier in there. And that one outlier was an extreme outlier. And after we released that report documenting that his docket was nearly double the size of the court average, was he had the largest percentage of cases for the entire court over a year old. He had the greatest number of in-custody pretrial inmates costing taxpayers over $5.1 million to house those pretrial inmates. They were waiting for their day in court, their right to justice. But in the meantime, because his docket was so large, it was costing taxpayers $5.1 million to house those inmates in pretrial custody. So after we released that report, shortly after that, the judge put in a request for a medical leave. And as a result of that, since he left the court, the Supreme Court appointed an ad hoc or a temporary judge to sit in his place. And within a matter of a few weeks, his docket has been reduced. The numbers of inmates in pretrial custody have been significantly reduced. Basically, the city has saved and taxpayers have saved over $400,000 by the ad hoc judge showing up for work, doing the job that Judge Durbany was being paid to do. And the pretrial inmate population from Section J, his section of court, was diminished to the tune of a savings of over $400,000 to taxpayers. So that's what exposing what was actually happening in the court. The general report was very positive for the court as a whole, but there was one extreme outlier that was that problem was identified by the numbers. That's not a subjective opinion. Those are just the numbers that we presented to the public. And as a result of those numbers, the judge apparently decided to request a medical leave and has stepped away, freeing the runway for the Supreme Court now to appoint an ad hoc to replace that judge and begin to move the docket that he wasn't doing, not just in the 3-year period that we described here, but over the last 10 years, Judge Durbany was consistently one of the bottom judges, if not the last judge of all 12 of the judges year in, year out. So, that's a problem that was identified and the solution is in place. In that we have somebody in there right now that's actually doing the job, and it's actually resulting in his docket being reduced in a short period of time.
Your report also uncovered some other kind of strange anomalies that, as well, not necessarily judges, but the district attorney's office.
Well, so that was the first report. There was a second report that we put out that began to frame the issue of judge and jury trials. So in Louisiana, the defendant has the exclusive right to elect to be tried by a judge or jury. The prosecutor has no say in the manner of trial. Louisiana is one of 19 states that vest that authority as to determining the manner of trial exclusively with the defendant and their defense counsel. 31 other states require that the prosecution has to agree to a waiver before a jury can be waived. So it requires both sides, and I think that's a fundamental fairness issue. So you got 31 states that require the defense and prosecution to agree, and that's the rule in the federal system too. But Louisiana is one of the 19 remaining outliers. So we issued a report taking a look at all of the jury and judge trials that were conducted in criminal district court between 2022 and 2024 in Orleans Parish. We found that juries acquitted defendants at a 43% rate in Orleans Parish. 10 of the 12 judges had an average of 6 judge trials per year with an acquittal rate of 58%. Two judges, Judge Campbell, she, over a 3-year period of time, presided over 47 judge trials. So keep in mind, the defendant has the right to elect to be tried by a judge or jury. The 10 of the 12 judges, that only happened an average of 6 times per year. There are certain judges over there in which there were no judge trials conducted. The defendant didn't opt for judge trials in certain sections of court. So Judge Campbell had 47 judge trials over a 3-year period of time with a 79% acquittal rate. Judge Roche, the judge in Section I, had only been on the bench 1 year. His first year on the bench, he conducted 16 judge trials in his first year with an 88% acquittal rate. So after we issued that report, I was contacted by the court saying that Judge Roche had no recourse but to find those people not guilty because the prosecution failed to call witnesses, failed to introduce any evidence. So he had no recourse but to find those individuals not guilty. So we obtained copies of the trial transcripts for all of the judge trials in Judge Roche's section of court. And I was a former prosecutor, and I've been doing this with the Crime Commission, reviewing the performance of the criminal justice system for nearly 4 decades. And what I saw when I reviewed those transcripts is something that I never saw as a prosecutor, and I've never seen in my 39 years over here at the Metropolitan Crime Commission. I was speechless and stunned by what I found. We reviewed 17 trial transcripts conducted in Section I, which is Judge Roche's section of court. And what we found was that there were 17 not guilty verdicts. The transcripts averaged about 6 pages for the entire trial, and that's double spaced. There, in all 17 of the cases, there were either no witnesses called, and if there's no witnesses, there's no evidence. And in many of those cases, the prosecution didn't even bother with an opening statement. The prosecution didn't bother with closing remarks. The witnesses' names were called in the courtroom when there was no response. The witnesses weren't present. The prosecution rested. The judge found them not guilty. So one of the fundamental things you learn as a prosecutor, you never go to trial without witnesses and without evidence. So if a case is set for trial and you don't have the evidence and or the witnesses that are needed to meet your burden of proof, which is beyond a reasonable doubt, you do not go to trial. And what a judge can deny a continuance, but the judge has no recourse if the prosecution dismisses the case. And in 17 cases in which the prosecutor didn't have sufficient evidence and or witnesses to move forward with the trial, even in some of the cases, the prosecution requested a continuance and the judge denied the continuance. And the prosecutor went to trial knowing that he didn't have his witnesses, didn't have his victims, didn't have any evidence, and the outcome was going to be a not guilty verdict. So that was something that is so fundamentally basic, I've never seen that before happen once, much less 17 times, only in one section of court, by the same prosecutor. So that was stunning to me. I shared with you, you know, three of the transcripts of some of the trials that I reviewed. The first transcript I shared with you was a defendant accused of being a felon possession of a firearm, possessing a firearm at a school function, and possession of a firearm with an obliterated serial number. That was tried in February of this year. So the defendant waived the jury, elected to be tried by a judge. The prosecution told the judge that the police officer witnesses were not present. Judge Roche denied the prosecution motion for a continuance. The judge knew that the prosecution didn't have any witness or evidence. The trial proceeded. The officer called during the prosecution's opening statement saying that he could be there in half an hour. And rather than grant a recess, the judge ordered the prosecution to continue with the trial without the officer, and the defendant was found not guilty. So the prosecution should never have started without that officer being present. It's fundamental that if you don't have your witnesses, and in a gun case, those are necessary witnesses to prove the elements of the offense. You don't have the arresting officer, you don't go to trial. If the judge denies the continuance, you dismiss that case. That wasn't done. So, second case, 6-page trial transcript. Judge Roche conducted 2 judge trials in his section of court on November the 15th of last year, both of which had little or no evidence and ended in not guilty verdicts. The first case was battery on a dating partner with a dangerous weapon. The prosecution told the judge that several officers were subpoenaed but weren't present and they weren't ready to proceed to trial. The judge said he wouldn't grant a continuance. He said, let's go to trial. In the opening statements, once the judge says go to trial and you don't have your officers, the prosecution should have dismissed it. And a judge should not allow a prosecution to go forward when there is going to be no evidence. So if there is no evidence, you're wasting the court's time. And I believe, and I'll get to that in a few moments, you're also violating the code of professional conduct that governs attorneys and judges, but we'll get to that in a moment. So, you know, the prosecutor explained during his opening statements that the police documented that the victim called the police, was being pistol whipped by the accused, and was actually being strangled by the defendant when the police arrived. The officers were subpoenaed but weren't present. And the victim was subpoenaed but wasn't present. But the prosecutor would know that the officers and the victim were not present before the case started. That's his job to know that. And without them present, you do not proceed to trial. You request a continuance. If the continuance is denied, you dismiss the case. Because a dismissal doesn't mean the case is over. It means that the case can be reinstituted when those victims and witnesses become available. But when you go to trial and you present no evidence, there is you don't meet your burden of proof. The result is jeopardy attaches, and a not guilty verdict cannot be retried when those witnesses and victims subsequently become available. So you as a prosecutor, do not let jeopardy attach. You know, in a case in which you have no expectation of winning because you have no victims, no evidence, and no witnesses. So the third case is really got my attention. This is, it shows really how orchestrated and premeditated this whole charade was of these cases that were being tried before Judge Roche. So this is a double defendant case. The trial transcript for a double defendant case took 4 pages of trial transcript testimony. On Halloween of last year, Judge Roche found 2 defendants not guilty of possessing a firearm with narcotics, possession of a stolen firearm, and possession with intent to distribute narcotics. So the defense waived the jury, tried by a judge, no opening statements by the prosecutor, didn't have any witnesses or evidence present. But before the state began its case, the defense attorney announced that they were present and ready for trial and stated on the record to the judge, "I didn't wear my Halloween costume as you mentioned last time." The judge, "That's all right. Let's see if this is going to be a trick or treat." So that to me summarizes what a charade this trial was. You know, here it is, the defense attorney and the judge on Halloween day, you know, announcing and talking about a felony case that's about to be tried, that, you know, they discussed about the defense attorney wearing his Halloween costume to the trial. And so that suggests to me that the judge knew that there was going to be no evidence in this case, and the judge was fine with that. So, you know, we've documented now that there are 17 cases that went to trial in Judge Roche's section of court that were tried by him as the trier of fact. And in all 17 of those cases, there were no victims, no witnesses, no evidence, and the verdicts were all not guilty. So under the Code of Professional Conduct governing attorneys, there is a requirement pertaining to prosecutors saying that prosecutors shall refrain from prosecuting a charge that is not supported by probable cause. So if the prosecutor begins a case without victims, without witnesses, the prosecution is in violation of the Code of Professional Conduct governing attorneys. So in each of these cases, there were no victims, no witnesses present for trial. The prosecution knew that they couldn't establish probable cause, much less meet their burden of proof to obtain a conviction. These cases all should have been dismissed rather than proceed to trial because there was no evidence to support a conviction. It's a violation of the rules for this to occur even once. much less 17 times over a one-year period of time, only in Section I. So we're dealing with another rule, too, that says that a lawyer that is aware that another lawyer has committed a violation of the rules of professional conduct that reflect on the prosecutor's fitness as a lawyer shall inform the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. The judge is a lawyer. The judge is presiding over these cases. He's supposed to be familiar with the Code of Professional Conduct because he was a lawyer before he was a judge. He was a criminal defense attorney before he was a judge. So he is governed by the laws of professional, or the rules of professional conduct governing lawyers. So he's observed prosecutorial misconduct, and he didn't report it to the district attorney's office. He didn't report it to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. He didn't do it once. He didn't do it in any of the 17 cases that we've documented here. So I believe that the judge, by failing to do his responsibility, has violated the judicial canons that say that a judge shall respect and comply with the law and shall act at all times in a manner that promotes public confidence in the integrity and partiality of the judiciary. So
we got to get dealing, Rafi, we got to get to a break. Let me get to the break. This is there's so much to unwrap here. This is absolutely incredible. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. Okay, we're back with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. So what we have are two sidebar issues, prosecutorial misconduct, failure in reporting professional misconduct by the judge. So where do we go from here?
Well, so when I was first notified by the court, after we issued that report talking about the acquittal rate and the number of judge trials conducted by these two judges being well outside of what the norm was for the entire court and the other 10 judges on there, the response I got from Judge Roche was he had no recourse. And he alleged that the prosecution had presented no witnesses and no evidence, and he was precluded from returning anything other than a not guilty verdict. And I agree with that, but that was only a part of the story. But when I got that notice, before I had the transcripts, the ability to review those transcripts, I immediately informed the district attorney's office that there was a problem. And I told them what the allegations were made by the court. I said, I haven't received the transcripts yet. I'm waiting to get them. They asked me, can you give me the case numbers of all of the cases that were a part of your study? I did. So they said that they were going to be pulling the transcripts too. I know that I obtained the transcripts, so if the transcripts were printed, they should have been provided to the DA's office, but I don't know if they did obtain the transcripts. But the bottom line is the district attorney's office was made aware of this within an hour of me being notified by the court. And I didn't hear from the DA's office for a matter of weeks. And I reached back out to them last week, and I had a conversation with Jason Williams about the case, and he said that there's a problem in Section I, which is Judge Roche, and he essentially was blaming the problem on the judge. And I said, look, it's fundamental. I was a prosecutor. You do not go to trial. I said, why did it take me to tell you what had happened in these cases? You should be aware of what's happening in every section of court. Every case that's closed should be reviewed. When you see a series of not guilty verdicts coming through, you need to review those to determine, did my prosecutor make a mistake? Did my screening division make a mistake in charging a case that wasn't truly viable? You need to look into it. If you have witnesses that aren't showing up for court, why is that? Every one of those cases need to be managed and reviewed on a real-time cases, a real-time basis. So you're looking at 17 cases over a year, and the DA's office didn't catch any of them until I called them and told them about it. So not only is this misconduct on the part of the assistant district attorney, but the entire chain of command in the district attorney's office. They're supposed to manage and supervise their staff. And they were, according to them, totally unaware of this issue in Section I. And then, you know, you're dealing with, I think, another issue where, you know, the judge, when they instructed, you know, a court official to contact us to let us know that the prosecution had committed essentially misconduct, didn't realize or wasn't fully aware of the responsibility to report misconduct. And, you know, that is, you know, it's bad enough that the acquittal rate was what it was in Section I. For the judge to think that asking us to review the transcripts was going to result in a free pass for him or exonerate him of any misconduct, I don't know what he was thinking. Because, you know, it's very clear to me from reviewing these transcripts that the judge was aware before the case started and that there was going to be no evidence. And this was just one big sham 17 times that I was able to find in that section of court. That's a waste of the court's time. And from a matter of the finality of a case, if a case is dismissed, it can be reinstituted when victims and witnesses become available. But if the case is tried and a verdict is rendered, jeopardy attaches and the case is over. Doesn't matter if the victims and witnesses are now available at a future date. The case is forever closed because jeopardy has attached. So essentially, a dismissal can be reinstituted, a not guilty verdict, jeopardy attaches and it's over and there is no recourse in that.
There's another issue as well. I mean, you have no victim there, but you had no police there, although the police were subpoenaed, according to the transcript.
Right. So,
do we know when they were subpoenaed?
No, I haven't seen the subpoenas or the returns on the subpoenas. But it is a separate issue where the police weren't there, but a prosecutor knows before the case starts.
I get it, but what I'm saying is that this is emblematic of a complete total breakdown on everybody's part.
Okay,
right?
So what I don't know if the prosecution talked to the police and told them don't even bother coming. You know?
Well, if that's the case, then we have collusion. Then we're intentionally tanking cases.
Well, there's no other conclusion. If this happens one time, you know, maybe it's a green attorney and doesn't understand. When it happens 17 times, you know, that is not random events. That's a consistent pattern.
These are moments, you know, and I'm going to say it again, where the Louisiana Supreme Court needs to step in, utilizing their supervisory authority, and get this crap straight, because this is not acceptable. I mean, this is not how this is supposed to work.
Well, of course not. Of course not.
And, you know, I mean, you've got everybody pooping all over themselves, you know, and not doing this right. And meanwhile, the community, as you well know, I'm preaching to the choir, so forgive me. Meanwhile, the public is the one that's getting used and abused. in more ways than one. I mean, this is craziness.
Right. And, you know, keep in mind that the defense counsel, they're licensed attorneys in the state of Louisiana. If they observe prosecutorial misconduct or misconduct on the part of a judge, they have the obligation to report it. They didn't do anything either.
So they won the prosecution.
And the judge, you know, all on the same team. It's supposed to be an adversarial system between prosecution and defense, and the judge is supposed to be the independent arbitrator to make sure that both attorneys, both sides of the aisle, defense and prosecution, are following the law and the rules of evidence.
And I wish I had a nickel, Rafi, for every time Judge Frank Shea ordered me to go grab an NOPD officer that was subpoenaed to go to court that morning and did not show up, and he held that case in abeyance, and I had to go to a district station, find out where this guy was, go to his house, put him in a car, bring him back to court.
Right. So what's
because he wasn't going to play. He wasn't going to play this game. He was going to move cases through his docket.
Well, I mean, so in one of these cases, the judge was told by the prosecution, the officer is 30 minutes away. They'll be here in 30 minutes. This is a case in which the defendant is free on bail. He's not in custody.
Right.
So what's delaying this 30 minutes to wait for that officer to get there?
Well, the fix is in.
The judge denied the recess because he wanted to get this over with. It was preordained. There's going to be a not guilty verdict in all of this. And this happened 17 times.
Right. Wonderful. You know, be proud of yourself, Judge. I mean, this is unbelievable. I just had Ed Walters, the president of the Louisiana State Bar Association, on, you know, because of the criticism of the CLE, of what judges are going to, multitude of CLEs and this and that and everything else. This is a classic example of Supreme Court needing to get involved for sure. All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Okunar Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back with Rafi Goyeneche. Stay with us. So we're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission, who just revealed something he says he hadn't seen in his 30 to 40 years of experience. I've never heard of something like this. It's absolutely incredulous. Rafi, I got to ask you, so who makes the complaint again with the Judiciary Commission, and who makes the complaint with the Bar Association?
The MCC.
Thank you.
You know, so this is, you know, as I said, you know, if we, the Crime Commission, don't do this type of review of the criminal justice system, we're not talking about this today. It doesn't mean that it's not happening. It means that if we're not issuing these reports and pulling back the curtains and getting our hands dirty, taking a look at the way sausage is made in the criminal justice system, it just means that these 17 cases that we're talking about become 34 cases a year. So the problem doesn't go away. The problem just simmers below the public's awareness levels. So as distasteful as all this is, the fact that we've discovered this now and are presenting it is the beginning of fixing something that was badly broken. So it's sad that you have to have, you know, a private nonprofit like the Crime Commission informing the district attorney about what's happening in his shop, about his assistance. It's, you know, it's sad that, you know, you have to explain to the judiciary, particularly this judge, that, you know, not only did he violate the code of professional conduct for attorneys, but he's culpable in allowing this to occur in his section of court. Before I went forward with all of this, I spoke to a number of judges, both former judges and current judges, just to make sure that I wasn't missing something. everyone that I presented these facts to were stunned. Said they'd never heard of anything like this. So, you know, your reaction, my reaction, members of the judiciary that I know and trust reaction, this is unimaginable. And none of this comes to surface unless the Crime Commission is doing these reviews. So, you know, you can't begin
But you know what pisses me off, though? I'm going to be quite honest with you, and you've heard it before. How many times have you heard a police officer say talk about all the games that are being played in criminal district court? They don't really put their finger on it because they're not lawyers. They don't exactly know what's happening. But my suspicion is it's shit like this.
Oh, sure.
I mean, sure. This is what they're talking about, that the fix is in. You know, they can't really get their finger on it, but you did. And hopefully the Supreme Court wakes up. Wake up, Supreme Court. You know.
One of the solutions, Newell, is changing Louisiana law to have Louisiana become one of the 32nd state to require both the defense and prosecution to agree before a jury can be waived. If this is a jury trial, there's no way that the district attorney's office is going to allow this to happen. But when it's a judge trial like this, this flies under radar. And this is essentially the DA's office should have dismissed the case. They don't want a dismissal stat. They'd rather eat a not guilty verdict. And it shouldn't be about who's going to be blamed for it. It's about ethically doing the right thing. And if you do not have sufficient evidence to go forward to obtain a conviction, you dismiss the case. You do not go to trial and allow jeopardy to attach. And as a judge, you do not allow, make the court do the work that the district attorney's office is supposed to do. And if the district attorney's office is committing misconduct, the judge has an affirmative continuing duty to report it to the appropriate authorities. That didn't happen in any of these cases, both by the prosecution and by the judge.
Judicial malpractice, prosecutorial malpractice, system malpractice. Hopefully somebody wakes up over there on Royal Street. They have supervisory authority on this. You know, they ought to mandate CLE, and they ought to mandate it in their building. We shouldn't be traveling. Let's get this straight so we understand what we're doing here. Otherwise, well, there's always a side that they knew better and this was intentional anyway. And, sure. And if that's the case, these folks need to be removed, plain and simple. Why should we tolerate this? I mean, the community shouldn't tolerate this at all, right?
Right.
You know, the public gets the short end of the stick. Again, Rafi Goyeneche, as always, bringing forward some very interesting stuff. Just when I thought I have seen it all, little did I know. President of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. I don't know what to do with this. Stay with us. Scoot's up next. What do you have coming up, Scoot?
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about what Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser said yesterday about Governor Jeff Landry vetoing a bill that got unanimous support in the legislature. Also, we've got to talk about Trump and Hegseth and their attack on the media, set the record straight on some of those things. And we'll talk about why political violence has increased since President Trump took office.
Scoot's headed your way, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Thursday evening. We'll see you tomorrow.